Welcome to DLC Live, your source for educational and inspirational interviews with mental health experts and advocates from around the world. Now, here's your host, creator of the DLC Anxiety Worldwide Mental Health Community, Dean Stott.
Hi, Becky. You okay?
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem at all. Thank you very much for taking some time out to speak to the followers. I really appreciate that.
I'm excited to
Brilliant. For everyone who doesn't know your work, if you can just give a brief explanation about what you do in the mental health industry, the reason that you got into it, and also how long you've been doing it.
Great. Hi, everyone. My name is Dr. Becky Kennedy. I'm a clinical psychologist based in New York City, and I specialize in three things. I specialize in anxiety, so that's a good fit, in parenting, and in resilience. And obviously, those things are all coming together right now. And in my I have a private practice. I run parenting groups. I actually don't work with young kids, but I work with adults who have young kids, or just adults. And I really got into this field because I struggled. As I was growing up, I was a really kind of perfectionistic kid. I was really, really high, high pressure and kind of achievement oriented. And that led to moments of feeling really on top of the world and then moments of feeling really out of control when things were going exactly the way I wanted them to. And there's nothing that interests me as much as people. I find people and family systems fascinating. I find it fascinating how the things we learn from our parents unwittingly get passed on to our kids even when we don't want them to. And I find it really interesting to help people do things differently and pass on different patterns. And I find this field so compelling.
Well, that's really interesting. And regarding obviously lockdown and COVID situation, have you noticed any difference in the family units? Obviously, a lot of families are staying together now. Has it been better for mental health overall, would you say? Or would you say it's caused some strains?
I think it's caused a lot of strains. I mean, talking about parenting, I don't know any parent I know who said, you know what I want? I want an unending amount of time at home with my children. I've never met anyone. I've never said that. I don't want that, to be clear. And so here we are in a situation that nobody wanted to be in, nobody opted into, without a sure end in sight. And our mind, as you know, being in this field too, is just prone to worry and anxiety right now, all while we have to work from home, deal with financial stress, health stress, world stress, and parent our kids, who might also be anxious. Yeah. So it's just really hard.
Yeah, and like you said, the children obviously might also be anxious as well, so it's also that reassurance that you have to give them as well.
Yeah.
I've got some questions from the platform. So a lot of the followers have submitted some questions because I get asked a lot of the time, especially from young adults, children, the best way that they can approach the parents. So the first question is, what's the best way to explain to a dismissive parent that I'm struggling with anxiety? Do you have any tips on how best to approach?
Such a great question that I'm actually rarely asked. That's such a good question. So number one, I think what we have to realize is the reason people are dismissive of mental health concerns is because we're coming into contact with their own dismissiveness of their own mental health. If you're talking to someone who doesn't like to talk about their emotions and that makes them feel, not comfortable, when you bring up yours, it's not that they want to dismiss yours. We're now just playing around with emotions in general. Their body says, no, don't go there, really for yourself. And then they shut you down. So I think one of the best things you can do to kind of get around that is just be very specific with what you want before you even say the thing you want to say. So hey, let's say it's, hey, mom, I want to talk to you about something that's kind of tricky to talk about. I'm about to tell you what it is, but before I do, I just want you to understand and let's say help me get help. I don't want you to try to convince me otherwise. Okay, here's the thing. I've been feeling really anxious. I think I need some help, as an example. Where if you don't with the first part and you just say I'm anxious, you're going to activate that person's own relationship with mental health. So instead, just leading with, I just want support. I want you to listen. I don't want you to prove me wrong or convince me otherwise. That kind of tells you up front what you're looking for.
So do you think the parent, some parents obviously, do you think when their children say to them, I'm feeling anxious, that they automatically go into a parent mode of, oh, I need to try and fix this? And do you think that can then cause anxiety in themselves?
I do. I mean, I have so many thoughts about that in general. One of the biggest things I say to parents I work with is, and I think this is true for your kids, but it's really true for ourselves. Our feelings never want to be fixed. They have never wanted to be fixed. They have never wanted to be solved. Our feelings want to be understood, and they want connection with other people. That's all they've ever wanted. Our anxiety actually comes from years of people responding to our emotions by essentially saying, don't feel that, do this instead. And then when the feeling comes back, you're like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. I have to get rid of it. So
yeah,
we can pass on. So I think that what we want to do so differently, what I encourage parents to do, is to even think, my goal for my child, it feels weird, is not to make them feel better. The feeling will feel better on its own time. My goal with my kid is I want my kid to leave this conversation thinking one thing. My parent gets me. My parent understands me. My parent is in it with me. Because when someone is in a dark feeling with us, that's what makes the feeling release a little bit. And it's a really different perspective. But whenever parents try it, they always say, they're like, wow, my kid liked that a lot better. Wow. Maybe that's interesting. I guess I didn't have to fix the problem. He liked me not fixing it. He liked me just asking questions and saying, you're allowed to feel that way.
No, that's a really thorough answer. And I can see a lot of the comments saying that that really hit home. So thank you very much for that answer. The second question I have is, it's from a parent's perspective. I seem to make my child anxious when I'm feeling anxious. So do you have any tips on that? So they're getting anxious and then the child's obviously seeing and fearful that obviously there might be something wrong with the parents.
Yes. And here's the so complicated. When a kid notices something in their environment that makes them feel off, right? When they're predisposed to do, we're evolutionary creatures, right? Kids have to notice when things change. If they see something that feels off to them and the thing isn't explained to them, they will take it on as their fault. That sounds sad, but it's actually something they do, right? We don't want that, but it's something they do to try to explain the situation. They're like, oh, if I was just a better kid, my mom would be calmer, right? We don't want that. But to not have that happen, what we really have to do is own our stuff. It's kind of what the thing about feelings. Once we tell a kid a story of why they are seeing the things they are seeing, they feel better. This is true with coronavirus, but this is true with witnessing anxiety. So saying it to your kid doesn't make it worse. It makes it better. Saying to your kid, you noticed mommy crying. You noticed mommy having a hard time breathing in a kind of calm way. I want to explain that to you. Number one, because I want you to know that your perceptions are correct, right? We want kids to know, yes, you did notice that. That's the biggest thing in adulthood, is that we can trust ourselves. And then to second say, there's a name for this. Any name you want. I was having something called panic. I was having something called anxiety. And to say to your kid, that's a me thing. You didn't do that to me. And here's the thing, my big girl, I got my own feelings. And what that means is I get nervous. Just like you have big feelings, I have big feelings. When you have big feelings, sometimes you throw a block. When I have big feelings, sometimes it's hard to take a deep breath. I am working on that. You're working on that. And then the key is to say, even when I'm anxious, I'm still your mommy and I can take care of you. Right? Which is really what. So I think all of that, right? Let your kid know that they really are sensing something, that they're right. Name it. Tell them it's a your thing and it's not their fault. And then say something that seems weird, but kids need to hear. Even when I'm anxious, I'm still your mommy and I can still take care of you.
Yeah, that's absolutely golden advice. Thank you very much for that. And the next question is, it's regarding a parent, again, speaking about their child. Do you have any tips for a child who has bedtime anxiety. They don't like being alone at night. They already have a night light. So is there any other tips or things that you could put in place?
So for those of you, I guess everyone's on Instagram, right? But if you
Yeah.
for this a hashtag and then write DR, Dr. Becky Sleep, I have two carousel posts that are each 10 posts long. My posts, for better or for worse, like mini therapy sessions that I put on Instagram. I have so many thoughts. I can never keep them that short. So they're resources, so many thoughts on sleep. But the number one thing to think about with sleep is separation. Sleeping, separation anxiety. When we ask a kid to go to sleep, we're asking them to be without us in the dark, often alone, right? Often for ourselves. I know I sleep with a little light on in my bathroom. I have my husband, right? Meanwhile, my 5-year-old, I'm like, good night, have a good night. I hope so it's separation anxiety. And number one thing to realize is you need to work on sleep issues during the day before you can have them help at night. Because if it's about separation, we don't feel safest in our body alone at night. If we're nervous
No, definitely not.
to work during the day, right? So that's when, and in my post, I go over so many little games to play and different ways of saying goodbye during the day and teaching kids a mantra. My kids say every night, mommy is near, Alex is safe, my bed is cozy, mommy is near, Alex is safe. That's if that's your name, right? My bed is cozy. And then what I think the other thing to realize kids need is sometimes kids really do need us to sit at the edge of their bed. They need us to sit at the door. They need us to sit outside. They need us to check. You know, parents get so worried. We're like, if I do that, I'm going to be doing that forever. Is that a bad habit? Making your kid feel safe is not a bad habit. And our kids right now feel unsafe because we are home. They're not doing normal things. Everything in the world is saying the world is not safe. And yet we're still saying, why are you having trouble sleeping? Right, I know why, because I'm a parent, because I want to go to bed at night and I don't want to parent anymore. But just allowing your kids to say, maybe they need a little more of me. Maybe I need to leave a recording of my voice in their room. Maybe I need to check on them. That's where I would start. And then I would definitely check out that hashtag Dr. Becky Sleep for like 20 strategies around that.
No, that's brilliant. And what would you say to a parent who says, I'm often having to sit on the other side of a room, and I feel that if I do continue to do that, that's going to become a routine that I can't get out of?
So what I would say, I'm a big fan because that to me brings up our parental anxiety. So often our kids are like actors in our play. It's our own stuff. They're just acting it out. So we see them, we see they might need us, and then we're like, oh no, what is this going to go on forever? So I know for me, because I worry about that with various things in my kid. Is my kid never going to share? Am I going to have the kid who no one will play with because he's bossy? And what I try to do the first step is just say, ooh, hello, future worry. Hello, future worry that's taking me away from what needs to happen today. And that's true. I think we know that right now beyond having kids, right? Hello, future worry about something in 6 months that's taking me away from today. And I think something I encourage parents to do is maybe try that when we give our kids what they need today, which is not just staying in the room, it's staying in the room, but maybe it's also moving out. We have to give our kids some boundaries too. But when we give them what they need today to feel emotionally safe, that's what really builds resilience over the years, right? So instead of thinking, oh, are they gonna need me in their room forever? To notice that worry and also say, maybe this is not just about needing me in their room. Maybe I'm building resilience today that they can draw on. That's what they're going to draw when the issues are larger than sleep.
No, that's a really good advice. Thank you. The next question is, how do I tell my parents that they're who are trying to help me regarding anxiety, but they're actually making me more anxious? So they're always on my back. They're almost making me worry about the anxiety. Do you have any tips for me to approach my parents and say that what they're doing isn't helping?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I don't know the more details, but sometimes it's tricky where I know for me, I know what doesn't work more easily than I know it works. I can tell someone that's not helping me, but it doesn't mean I can tell them what will help me, right? So if that's the case, you're still allowed to say that. You can even own, hey, I just want to tell you that I'm learning more. I'm even learning more about what's helpful and not helpful. And I'm realizing I'm quicker to know what's not helpful than helpful. So bear with me. I find it not that helpful. I think you're doing it from a place of caring, but when you're on me about how I'm feeling all the time, or did you do this exercise, or did you do that workbook, or did you go to your therapy appointment, that actually makes me more anxious, right? And I would just say it that way. And I'd say, I know you have the best intentions, and also related to my anxiety, I'm just trying to communicate more directly with people. And I want to let you know that is making me more anxious. And to me, there's a key word here. Two words, I think, I see a comment about my faces. My stories and my Instagram always have the most awkward screenshots because I'm very expressive. Like, that's awkward, but I'm just doing my thing. So it is what it is. But, you know, with anxiety, I think also there's two words that come to mind a lot, which is control and trust. To me, those words are in the psychological language, especially with kids, that the more we control someone, or send a message of control, we're sending someone the message we don't trust them. And I think what that question underlying is, I want them to trust me more. And trust comes with a little space. So to say that, you know, I don't think you don't trust me, but actually the best thing you could do to show me you trust me is to ask me a couple fewer questions. And maybe just because I know, let's say we're living together or you care, maybe we can just say we check in on Mondays at 4. Let's make that the check-in. And I promise you, if I feel awful, I will come to you before that. But please trust me that I'm doing what I need to do, and we'll have that form check in once a week.
So that's similar to technique of when you're feeling anxious and having a specific worry time in the day.
Yeah.
So
I love that.
Very similar to that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, let's get all my parents' anxiety about my anxiety into one block, so it doesn't spill over all the time, and then everyone wins.
And what happens is that you find out, say it's later on in the evening, you find that the things that you were worrying about in the morning are no longer worries in the evening.
That happens a lot, exactly.
Yeah. So the next question is, what are the most common mistakes parents make when speaking to children regarding the child's mental health or anxiety? What are the most common mistakes you've come across as a practitioner?
So if it's okay, I'm going to change the question, because when I hear mistakes, at least from me, I think, I don't know if they're mistakes, because I firmly believe every person is always doing the best they can with the kind of information and resources they have internally at that moment. And then right, what people say, when you know better, you do better, right? So I think a lot of people, what happens with regards to mental health is where we often don't even realize that we parent the way we were parented. Even the things that didn't feel good to us, they're kind of deep in our body. And if we don't work to shift them, we repeat them because it's just what feels familiar. And what feels familiar is comfortable. What feels uncomfortable is new. And we don't often realize that. We often think uncomfortable is bad, but it's usually just no. It's just usually just new. So to me, the number one thing that I try to get parents away from is kind of two things. Number one, that information doesn't scare kids. I think that's really huge, especially now in coronavirus. Parents come in, they say, my kid is tantruming all the time. They're a mess. What's going on? Maybe it's related to coronavirus, but they're rude. They're a disaster. And then things we end up talking about is they end up saying things like, oh, you know, I've never mentioned coronavirus to them. They're only 4. I think they're too young. To me, I want to turn this totally on its head. No, it's not information that scares kids. It's when they notice things around them that then they're alone with because their parents don't give them information to explain. Mm. That terrifies kids. Going back to sleep, there's nothing scarier to a kid than being alone in the dark. And emotionally, we leave kids alone in the dark all the time. Your kid will fare much better and have many fewer tantrums because he feels safer when you say to him, there's been a jumpy cold. There's been a jumpy virus. It jumps from person to person, but we realized if you're in your house, it can't jump house to house. That's why we're in our house. Or then say, we've made so many of those viruses go away that we can go out again. That's why we're wearing masks, though, to keep any leftover jumpy viruses away. When you say that to a kid, all their feelings of noticing, oh, this is so weird around me, oh, they all take a deep breath. This is the same when kids notice a marital argument. Right? You have to go to your kid after and say, you notice mommy and daddy arguing and even using a loud voice. That probably scared you. That wasn't your fault. Two people who are married sometimes argue. And if you notice, daddy and I figured it out and we hugged it out and we're going to work to stay calmer next time. Now a kid can feel safe. So what I encourage any parent here to think about is, What might I need to explain to my kid so they have a story to understand something scary or uncomfortable, so they're not alone with that scary and uncomfortable feeling? To me, that is a hugely important framework.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. And the final question I've got from the followers is, my child, they're coming to the age now where they're understanding about people growing older and then passing away. Do you have any tips on the worry that they're getting from this for me to reassure them?
Yes. So I'm glad you asked that question. I love, and I'm actually kind of glad you used the word reassurance, because I think reassuring our kids too much when they're younger is the quickest pathway to becoming anxious when they're older. Okay. And that might sound weird, because I think
we
shift our kids so they don't become anxious. But the way I think about anxiety, especially as an adult, is anxiety is a reaction to a feeling. It's not a feeling itself. And it's a reaction to a feeling that we want to run away from, because our body has learned to be scared of that feeling. And why do we learn to be scared of feelings? Because we are left alone with them as kids. This is why, again, I encourage parents, don't try to talk your kid out of the feeling of sadness. He's going to feel sad at various points in his life. You want his body to remember, whenever I was sad, my mom just stayed with me in my room. That's what helps a kid tolerate anxiety when they're an adult. So when we're coming to death, there's no reassurances we can really give our kids. Now, let me be clear. I don't go around saying to my kids, hey, mommy could die at every second. Obviously, I don't say that. That's just not helpful either, right? But
no, definitely
make false promises, right? So when it comes to death, I actually have two. I deal with so many IGTVs, as you guys probably tell. I love to talk about this stuff. And I have two actually on death. One, how to talk about death in general, and one, how to deliver news of someone dying that affects your kids. But the general thoughts here is, number one, once your kid asks a question, they are ready for a developmentally appropriate answer. Because if you think about this, we can only ask a question when we have a baseline of information to consider that question. If my friend was a, you know, rocket scientist and she said, Becky, ask me a question about my work, I'd be like, I don't know anything about, I don't even know what to ask you. I can only even ask questions that I know enough about. So when a kid says, could you die? Or could somebody die of coronavirus? I think what we want to do is, we don't want to avoid that, because again, now my kid is scared. And either my choice is, do I leave them alone? Or do I say, yeah, I'm here with you. We want to do that. And to do that, I would say things like, I want to answer that question. It's going to be a tricky answer. I love that word for kids, tricky. It doesn't ascribe too much meaning, but it is accurate. It's going to be tricky. Here's the thing. I'm healthy. I have no reason to believe I have coronavirus or will get it. I'm using every safety measure. But you're thinking about how serious the virus is and how you know people have died of it. And that's true too, as an example, right? Or people say, what do I say when my kid says, are you going to die? Oh, that's a big question, sweetie. And I'm going to give you an honest answer. Let's get our bodies ready. And I would actually, yes. One day I will die. One day everybody dies. That's a lot to think about, huh? And then pause. And then follow your kid's questions. It's not answering the question that scares your kid. It's what's terrifying to a kid is to have thought enough about it to ask the question and then being alone with that. The other thing I like to do to parents is please, please, please always know, you can always say to your kid, that's a great question. I want to make sure I have a good answer. And I really want to think about it. I'm going to get back to you. And then actually do get back to you, to them. But that gives you time to be like, what am I going to do? That's so important. Who am I going to ask? I need to take a deep breath and then actually do follow up. So again, you have that connection, but really allow yourself to kind of process that yourself.
No, that's a really good thorough answer. And I'd like to obviously thank you for taking the time out to come on the live to show your vast experience. It's really interesting personally as well to get to know more about the techniques that you use. That's really interesting from a psychology point of view. And if anyone wants to see more from yourself, do you have a website? If they want to use your services, for example, where can they find you? What's your Instagram? And yeah.
Great. So my Instagram is Dr. Becky at Home, Dr. BECKYHOME. And I started that name right before the quarantine, but now it's kind of perfect because I'm at home, everyone's at home, and it's kind of a way of thinking together in your home. And really my Instagram, it is all about kind of anxiety and parenting, but I'm a big believer in this idea of reparenting, where so much of parenting just brings us into contact with our own histories. And so much of what I talk about, what we need to do with our kids, it's what we need to do with ourselves. So I have so many followers who don't have kids. So they post a ton, and I have a ton of IGTVs. I put up stories every day where I do a lot of acting out. I think what I almost specialize in is taking really deep ideas, but then translating them into very actionable strategies. So follow me there and DM me, let me know what you want to hear more about. And then I have three courses that are all video courses. You can stop and start whenever. And those are on building emotion regulation and managing tantrums. The second is parenting tweens and teens. And that's all specialized for this kind of pandemic time period. And then helping your older child adjust to a new sibling. Those are all, you can access them. They're through my link tree in my profile or at drthinkific.com. And then every couple of weeks I do workshops, and do one soon about the transition to school. I'll be doing one with a nutritionist on kids and food. So keep your eyes peeled for that as well.
Oh, that's wonderful. And it's wonderful that you, like you said, you're already gearing up for children going back to school and answering questions on that. So that's wonderful to hear. So continue doing what you're doing. It's amazing. Your profile's amazing. A lot of my followers, I know we're going to get a lot of useful information from you. And like you said, it's not just for parents. So you don't have to have children. And there's a lot of information that can really resonate with someone who doesn't have children.
Well, thank you for having me. And thank you to all of you. I get so many of my best ideas for my posts by people reaching out and just saying, can you post about this or that? So please send me ideas, tell me what you're struggling with. And I look forward to connecting with all of you. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for your time again, and enjoy the rest of your day. Take care. Yeah.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
DLC Live is the podcast from the world's largest anxiety support platform, bringing you educational and inspirational interviews with mental health experts and advocates from around the globe. Listen to DLC Live on your favorite podcast platform, and don't forget to subscribe so you won't miss a single episode.